White House Coronavirus Response Coordinator Deborah Brix has recommended that anyone who has visited New York should recently should self-quarantine for 14 days. Recommendation is not at all tied to fears of the coronavirus pandemic and has actually always been the advice for anyone visiting New York City.
Waving to his plants and cutting the ribbon on his new refrigerator.
The Senate is close to passing a $2 trillion coronavirus stimulus bill. It would have passed days ago, but Democrats wanted to make sure that it included provisions instituting the Green New Deal, arts endowments, including a $35 million grant for the Kennedy Center in D.C. So apparently, Democrats didn't want anybody to think that only Republicans were the ones who were out of touch with the needs of the people. And in desperate times, it's truly a bipartisan issue. Nobody cares about us.
The Senate's $2 trillion coronavirus bill includes a provision that blocks businesses controlled by President Trump and his family from receiving federal relief, which is bad news for Ivanka Trump's factory workers who won't be getting that hefty 20-cent raise this year.
Saying that the coronavirus cure cannot be worse than the problem itself, President Trump has said that he plans to reopen the country for business on April 12th, Easter Sunday. Now, I didn't pay attention in Sunday school, but I think I missed the part of the Easter story where Jesus died, 3 days later rose again, and then infected 59,000 people because he went to the Apple store in Sparrow.
Dr. Anthony Fauci says when he contradicts a statement by President Trump, he's just trying to get the facts out. He doesn't want to embarrass him. Yeah, that's my job, said Eric Trump.
And finally, in a graphic health department memo outlining precautionary safe sex practices during the corona pandemic, the city of New York is warning against rim jobs. Okay, then somebody tell me exactly how I'm supposed to pass 2 whole weeks without going outside. The Trump Report starts now.
I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Oh my goodness, welcome to the Trump Report. We are continuing to social distance. We're all actually in the same building, but we had these sets built so that it looks like we're somewhere completely different. It makes it more interesting. I'm Christian Blatt, joined as usual by Chelsea Galicia.
Hello there.
And my cohort in the making of mirth, Tamara Brown.
I was really wondering where you were going with that.
We all were.
Yes, we were. Mirth.
And of course, someone who I saw engaged in it wasn't really a Twitter back and forth, but I saw you yelling at President Trump earlier today, Scott Moore. Yep.
That's right.
Yeah.
Just like so, every day.
As always, there's so much, so very much to talk about, but I think we got to dive in with, is everybody as excited as I am to know that this is all going to be over by Easter? We're all going to be able to go back out. We're all going to be able to, we're going to be able to go out shopping. I guess the NBA is going to be back. Baseball is going to start. I don't know. I'm looking at going to, I don't know, an event of about 50,000 people or something. Come on, this is great news. Easter. It's so soon. It's like not even 3 full weeks away.
Christian, are you're believing President Trump. I see.
What?
Okay.
What are you talking? What's not to believe? He said Easter. And I was like, well, that's a lot sooner than I thought it was. I you know, they were telling us at the end of last week that it's like, hey, get ready for 18 months. And now it's like, well, we have like 18 more minutes. You know, so let's give it up for Anthony Fauci, by the way, whose job is basically
to
figure
make
out how to
behind the president.
Well, to make faces behind the president, but also be like, so that thing he just said is actually not true. Here's what's true. So like there's a way to do it. There's a tact to doing it. But I don't know. Is it too late to write him in for president? You know, I mean, I guess it's never too late because we still got time. Let me start with Scott Moore, because I can see that all these wheels are moving in your head. So where are you going to go for Easter?
So many choices. I'm not sure where I'm going to end up going. Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and get a honey baked ham. I'm going to wait in that long line of like 200 people waiting for the honey baked ham. It's going to be great.
Yeah. I mean, so many choices between that and going to a game, maybe a concert. who knows?
Actually, I think Wuhan, China would be a pretty safe bet.
Well, now, sure. I had a joke where I mentioned the Apple store. But the Apple stores are reopening throughout China. So this is great. They did such a great job of, making sure their people didn't do anything. And it only took 3 months. And now they're able to go back to their way of life. So, Chelsea, it's so hard to quantify, but let's just hypotheticalize this idea.
Hypotheticalize?
Because we live in an age where you can make up a word, and if you don't flinch, it becomes a real word. If there's probably a lot of things over the last 3.5 years that we maybe all have been a little critical of President Trump for, but if he were to tell everybody to, go to church and get out there and go to the Easter egg hunt and go visit the Easter bunny at the mall on Easter, it's like we've always said we wouldn't be surprised by him, or like, oh, he can't do anything worse than this. But I don't know. To me, that's a new bar. I just, the idea that he's even floating it right now is insane.
Yeah, I mean, it just goes to show how I think how many people in this country have an unhealthy relationship to the economy, maybe bordering on obsession that is just beyond. I mean, we always talk about how there are so many issues that people debate about going into an election, and then the entire thing ends up coming down to the economy. And I'm just in shock that it's not just the president saying this. There are a lot of people who want to open up our country again, whatever that means exactly. But they want us to be back in business, even though it may be deadly to people to do that. And I can't help but think that if you listen to President Trump and get sick, that that is, I guess, survival of the fittest. And if you are intelligent enough to pay attention to the experts and not to him, then you have a better shot at survival.
Well, I mean, apart from being incredibly dangerous, it's wildly inconsistent. For 5 years, he's wanted to build a wall, keep people out. Now he wants everybody to just come on in. And I don't know. I can't get a handle on what he wants. Yes, Scott Moore.
The cynical side of me would tend to think that what he's hoping for is that a lot of these blue state Democrats and governors will say, no, we're not reopening. And when those economies are, suffering worse, he's going to say, look, I told everybody to reopen, and now it's these Democratic governors' faults for not reopening the economy. And so the economy's tanking because of them, not because of me. And so that's the cynical side of me. And I think he's hoping.
I don't think it's cynical. I think that's accurate.
And some of the red state governors he's hoping will open up in areas that aren't having issues, and some of these other states like Florida and Texas, and that maybe they'll have some areas of increased cases, but he's hoping that those states will reopen, the economy better, and then he can blame Democrats for the economy going down. And I think that's what he's really saying, because he knows realistically he has no say into when individual states decide to reopen. And so he's using this as a cynical
tactic. Does he know that though?
Somebody has told him. I mean, he has no say as to, now he can just use this as a wedge issue and say, look, the economy is now tanking because other people are saying, no, I said to reopen and you guys aren't following that. So therefore, it's your fault now the economy's tanking, not mine.
Well, I don't think that Easter seems realistic. My understanding is, look, there are definitely parts of the country that you would be able to not resume regular everyday life, but it would be a little bit more normal. Maybe, I don't know, the beginning of May, sooner than somewhere like California or New York. And I can see pushing for, letting the governors sort of, make that determination. But this, to just go out there and promise us, you definitely have people that are starting to think like, oh my God, I thought this was going to be forever. It's only going to be a couple more weeks.
And but the truth is that we haven't seen the worst of it yet, and it's going to happen in the next couple of weeks, 1, 2, maybe 3 weeks. And then people might start to realize that this is going everywhere, and they'll see it spread in places that are not, you know, Washington, California.
There will be a new epicenter. I'm going to call New York City an epicenter, just for where it's like ground zero, where it's the worst, there's going to be a new, you know, it'll become New Orleans next or something like that.
So my prediction is that by Easter, there will be enough people across the country that see how this is impacting them, like it's gotten, you know, it's in their neighborhood, or at least it's in their county. And so they will probably be reluctant to go back out, even if Trump says that America is open for business.
Yeah. And look, I do understand the argument that it's catastrophic to the economy to do this. I don't think anybody's actually trying to discount that. It's just the idea is like how much worse it would be to the economy if, you know, you have this on the level of, I mean, we've, in terms of numbers, we've overtaken Italy at this point, but in terms of percentage of population, obviously, you know, there's a lot more of us to have to worry about. And I don't know. I think that, yeah, look, I think that an important part of all of this, I was reading earlier that NPR has decided that they're not going to air those briefings that the president gives live anymore because of just the amount of information that is put out there that is then, you know, debated and negated by a host of other people. And I mean, I think that if you tried to make CNN or any of the cable networks actually do that, they're like, are you crazy? Everybody's watching these things. I mean, I think Fox News did a town hall with him, and that 4 million people watched. A coronavirus town hall with Trump and the task force had 4.4 million viewers on Fox News, which when you think about how many of us are home, that's not really that many. I guess everybody else is watching Tiger King. But I don't, I referenced Fauci before, but he seems to be the only person that's taking it seriously, but there are others. It's just, he's the one that talks the most. But Tamara, do you expect that we might not be hearing from him so much anymore?
Oh, are you asking if, by negating President Trump, if maybe he's not going to get as much camera time, or he's going to be fired, maybe?
Maybe the second one. You know, I think President Trump might be inclined to replace him with Dr. Phil or something.
Wouldn't that seem a little petty or childish to do something like that?
I mean, you know who we're talking about, right?
I think his days are numbered. But more importantly, I don't think I'm alone in wondering, you know, I need an update on the tennis pavilion. I think a lot of America is wondering how that's doing.
The tennis pavilion is where we're all encouraged to be best. So I do hope it's built. You know, the tennis pavilion seems like the one thing that is not in this $2 trillion bill. And there are a few people who are, you know, you have some Republicans that feel like they're giving too much in the way of unemployment insurance. And then you have other people that feel like, you know, there's too much corporate bailout. But as we referenced at the top of the show, how hard do you think it was, Chelsea, to get a provision in there that none of this money is going to be able to go bail out any of President Trump's businesses?
How hard was that? Oh, God.
Yeah, I can't believe it's in there is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I'm grateful for it. I don't know how difficult it was to get it in there, but I am certainly.
Well, I don't know. Let's keep in mind, Scott, it hasn't been voted on yet. So just because it's in there right now, doesn't mean it's necessarily in there.
Yeah, that's true. And I have to say, you know, both sides were kind of using this to their advantage for a while they were negotiating. Yeah. And right now, a lot of the bad press was going towards the Democrats, saying they're putting a lot of their pet projects in, which I admit there were quite a bit of pet projects. It looked more like a straight, you know, line item kind of vote rather than something for specifically for this pandemic. But Republicans were also bad on trying to whittle down, you know, paid sick leave originally, and, you know, companies paying $15 an hour minimum wage. You know, there are a lot of things that they stripped from as well, like you said, and unemployment insurance. But it will be interesting to see how the final vote shakes out. I think it's kind of a shame that both sides were putting a lot of their pork into the each of the bills, which is, you know, somewhat unexpected, but it was a little bit of like, let's work together and really get something good out there, and then focus on nitpicking maybe some of the later bills. But let's just get it out the door now. It should have been their priority from both sides at this point, and both sides were not really adhering to that originally.
Yeah, look, to me, this is one of those instances where you can point fingers at both sides of the aisle. But the way that the story was advancing the last couple of days was that, you know, the Democrats weren't happy with a few of the things in there. And I'm just like, okay, so now the story is Democrats hold it up. And that's still the story, even though that's not 100% what the case is. And I just started to think like, yeah, remember how 4 years ago that seemed kind of like a gimme of a presidential election, a little bit of a layup. And, you know, the guy who didn't do enough to prevent us from being trapped in our houses for months, that seems like an easy guy to beat as president. But, you know, what's the one thing you could do to make people not like your party? Hey, we want to give you all this money, but the Democrats won't. But Tamara, you don't want any of that money, right? You don't want the $1,200. You're not interested in that, right?
Well, I don't think that's how it came off in the media, that the Democrats were the holdup, because I don't think, has it even been released? Like, because they were trying to make sure that corporations don't have, can you guys see me, by the way?
Yes, yeah. I see all four of us.
Okay. You know, we didn't want corporations to get, to benefit, to be able to pay their CEOs and their board of trustees and things like that. And I'm wondering what of that has been fixed in the bill. Well, has anyone heard any information on that part?
And well, you tell me if I'm right, Chelsea. My understanding was that the companies wouldn't be able to, like in the bailout of 2008, use their bailout money to buy back their own stock. And I don't know enough beyond that. That was the one thing I've heard. So what's being done? You can argue that more needs to be done, but what is, as far as we can tell, Chelsea, being done that is not of the most benefit to large corporations?
Well, what I have heard is that the actual text of the bill has not been made available, so we don't know exactly what's in there. But it has been welcome news to me that a lot of people have become vocal, including Mark Cuban and even the president, to say that companies that get this money shouldn't be able to do buybacks with it, and that there is looking at some limitation on the length of time. Is it a number of years or until this money is paid back or something of that nature, that they can't do buybacks? I liked Mark Cuban's idea that if they get any money, that they can never do buybacks. Because it's the buybacks that have caused them to not have any cash on hand to handle situations like this. You know, companies are supposed to be aware of what kind of sort of threats, dangers, emergencies that lay in the landscape, and cruise ships and airlines, they know that this is should be in their business, you know, models, that they have to contend with this. And so they should have emergency savings, just like American individuals are supposed to have emergency savings to get them through the rough times. So when I feel like corporations are being treated the same as individuals with a level of personal responsibility that's expected, then I'd be happy with the bill. But right now, I don't understand why any money needs to go to corporations themselves. If we take care of people, if people have enough to get by, why do corporations need money? And then I hear this thing about, oh, well, they need to keep paying employees. Well, forget about paying employees. Let's just pay Americans directly. I understand they have continuing overhead. Well, some of that can be paused. I'm sure most of it can be paused. So I'm not really sure what is it that corporations need the money for. I understand that, you know, that there's, you know, exceptions, but largely if we take care of people, why do we have to take care? Why do corporations need to get this money? And I haven't heard a good response to that. I don't know if anybody else has, but I would love to hear about, you know, why corporations need to be treated like people in this sense when I don't think they should be.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that point, but I do think that, you know, you can probably pick and choose, but there are probably industries.
I'm hearing myself a lot.
I don't know, Ryan, should we do something different? Yeah, because there's been a little bit of an echo throughout, and now I'm hearing myself, so that seems...
Just real quick, y'all, I think someone took their headphones on or off.
Yeah, no, my headphones aren't working, so that's why I have to take them off.
Gotcha.
Okay. All right, so, yeah, but I mean, I was just hearing everything I said echo, which I'm not hearing now, so...
But Christian or anybody else have... But, first of all, let's talk about these cruise lines. They're purposely not registered in the United States so that they can avoid U.S. taxes. Yeah. Why are we trying to bail them out?
Well, first of all, before we get to that, this is the time we have to point out, unfortunately, the Trump Report cruise that we all had scheduled through the Grand Caymans June 1st, right now we're going to hang on to your deposit, but we will not be setting sail that day. No, I mean, look, that's a good example. But I mean, look, if the entire airline industry goes down, that becomes a problem.
Okay, hold on a second. Let's play that out. So let's just say United Airlines doesn't have enough money to hold on and they go under. So if they file for bankruptcy, then what happens? Then they have to sell off their assets and somebody else buys those planes and set up un-United Airlines, and then they've got it, you know, isn't that part of the free market? I mean, if you don't make it, somebody else will pick up the pieces that you left behind that you've got to sell off, and maybe they'll do it better. And when the next, you know, crazy thing happens, they'll be better prepared because they learned from their predecessors' mistakes.
That's our only option for capitalism nowadays, since that we can't have true competition with all of the corporate monopolies. So the only way for anybody to stay in competition is to wait for that company to fail and pick up a piece.
I mean, listen, there are, you know, when we've heard, I can't remember who was the most recent person to say it, but somebody was saying, I think it was Jamie Dimon, CEO of Chase, who was like, I look forward to recessions because that's when I, you know, get bigger and assets go on sale and I get richer, or something to that extent. Not a direct quote, but this is the reason why he said that, is because companies go under. Listen, people lose their homes and there are people waiting to swoop in on those homes that got foreclosed on. And that seems to be okay with people that we do that. So why can't we do that to the airline industry if they go down because they failed to plan for something that they either knew or should have known? And I say should have known because this is, you know, even though this episode of this condition, this pandemic was unforeseeable, that it was going to happen right now. Pandemics themselves are not unforeseeable and they are, you know, a known risk to us all. So
I want to bring in a comment from the Demon Knot in the chat, one of our old friends. I think that the economic shutdown may do more damage than the coronavirus, which is something President Trump is saying. He points out the Fed president is already talking about 30% unemployment and 50% job drop in GDP. Can't just shut down and reopen an economy. But I mean, the economy is existing on a different basis. Look, We're using Zoom right now. I'd never heard of Zoom 2 weeks ago. And now everybody talks about how, oh, they're going to Zoom together for a birthday party, or they're going to get everybody together on Zoom. And I'm like, man, where was somebody letting me know to, buy an IPO for Zoom? Hey, Amazon's doing all right now. I think I had 5 boxes from Amazon and 3 from Target on my front step just today alone. Don't worry, I wash my hands after. I completely agree. And the argument that I had going back like 2 weeks ago was like, oh, this can't last too long because of what it'll do to the economy. But that was before you started to see what the projections were. And you're like, well, kind of has to last longer than anyone is comfortable with. So it's a matter of like, yeah, look, the economy will be what it is. And that's when a $2 trillion bailout is nice. The $1,200 checks, it's not nearly enough. I've seen people online pointing out that in Canada, they're giving out $2,000 a month for 3 or 4 months. Now their population is much smaller than ours.
Have a smaller base of taxpayers.
Sure, sure. But I'm just saying that it's always hard to make the direct comparison. I feel like we there'll have to be more money kicked around, and the alternative is pretty disastrous. I understand all these arguments in favor of the economy. Let me just say that the reality of it is you can't do it just because it's bad for the economy. If it's like, oh, it's bad for the economy, and I don't know what the acceptable number is, like X number of people get sick and very few of them die. Sure. But that's not what anyone's telling us. One's telling us that this only makes you sick. In the first weeks of it, everybody was like, it's just another flu. I probably said something similar to that because, that's just what you were hearing. And it's just the irresponsibility of like, well, we have to go back to the way we were. What were you trying to say, Chelsea?
So many things that you said, things popped into mind. But remember, one of the big goals is that even if a lot of us get it, that would be okay if that was over a longer period of time. The name of the game is to not overwhelm the medical system. And it's already overwhelmed because of how short we are on supplies for these people to protect themselves. And so I think that's the biggest, the most important thing that we can do right now is to protect our entire medical field. I mean, I think we don't appreciate it enough until sort of it's gone or it's as compromised as it is right now. But what would happen if the economy did take a break, a breather of a couple of months? And I mean, are we afraid that our GDP is going to become now in second place to China? I mean, what is really the concern? I mean, I hear when I heard of the lieutenant governor in Texas saying that he wants his grandchildren to have the American dream. I don't know if he's been awake, but right now the people that are living don't really have the American dream when the economy was the best it's ever been. And I'm using, air quotes because I don't agree with the way that the economy is measured. So it just seems that there is something else to this. And it's not really about a concern for, the well-being of our economy for our grandchildren's sake. There's, something, a little more sinister, I think, than this. Just everybody wants to go back to work. Everybody's so excited and would be thrilled to, go back to this brutal economy that we had that was so wonderful. I mean, I think that having a breather is okay. Having parts of it fall away. It's kind of like, when your body gets sick and you don't feel like eating and you're sleeping all the time. Part of what's going on is your body is eating away at the old, decrepit, unhealthy, wasteful parts of it that it no longer needs. And I think that could be what's happening with the economy right now. If we just let it, breathe for a little bit, parts of it that we don't need, that we outgrow, there's, maybe I can start doing depots in court. Well, you know, entirely by Zoom, because, you know, technology's got to catch up with that so that we can keep going. And then there's going to be less people out on the streets, and it'll have other, you know, benefits. But let's just let things be okay right now and let the economy bend itself to the present circumstances, rather than us trying to ignore what's happening and try and go back to the economy as is. The economy as is not going to survive in the same way. It just cannot.
Well, I want to sort of pull on a thread that you mentioned, Chelsea, and I'll ask Tamara first, then Scott. The Texas Lieutenant Governor, who has walked back comments that the grandparents out there would gladly give their lives so that their grandchildren could have a thriving economy. I'm not a grandparent, but I am a parent, and I'm like, no, that I don't need my kids to have that kind of economy. It'll be all right. We'll figure something out. Your thoughts first, Tamara, on those comments.
I think the lieutenant governor, it sounds like he's been following Vanessa Hudgens on Instagram. They have the same opinion there on, how did she put it? Like, but dying is sad, but inevitable.
Yeah.
So,
for my comic book nerd friends, Vanessa Hudgens is basically a real life Thanos. Anyway, finish your thought.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, that's just any politician's suggestion that anybody could sacrifice their life, whoever they may be saying, even if a politician cannot say that somebody should be able to sacrifice their life in order to get the mass population to sustain. I mean, that's ridiculous and silly. And yeah, that's it.
Scott, I'd like you to weigh in on this, asking the greatest generation who has sacrificed so much for us to now, yeah, but come on, don't my grandparents want me to be able to go to spring break?
Yeah, that's right. Don't my grandparents want me to go and get completely wasted and spend all that money at restaurants and hotels? I mean, it was very Hunger Games-esque when you're like, well, let's just, you know, sacrifice a few people and, you know, just get back to work. Again, the whole thing is very tone deaf and ridiculous, but it doesn't surprise me. This is going to be the new kind of Republican counterpoint is going to be, okay, well, the economy is great under us and Donald Trump. And if we can't do this, then it's not our fault. You know, so I think this is going to be their new tactic on trying to blame it on everything else but them in the long run. And it's mind-boggling how people are now taking this and running with it on the Republican side. I mean, even the Republican media or the conservative media, you've heard from Britt Hume, Lou Dobbs, all these people now are saying, oh yes, let's just reopen it up again and everything will be fine. And there was a quote from Bill Gates earlier, which was, you know, basically brought it home and said, oh yeah, everyone go out and shop, but just don't mind the bodies in the corner. It really does start to look bad when you're telling people to go out and do things, and knowing that this disease is extremely contagious, and that's what makes it different from the flu, is that it's extremely contagious. We don't have a vaccine, and now we're supposed to go out and potentially what happens. Then are we shutting down again for another extended period of time? So, I mean, that's the issue about, you know, doing this too soon, is that you end up reinfecting the population and the numbers go up again, and now we're back in the same situation again. And that's not going to be any better for the economy.
As preposterous as it is that we're, you know, getting, you know, official government economic predictions from Larry Kudlow, who used to have a show with Jim Cramer, you know, I think I would rather actually get my economic information from Jim Cramer while he's yelling. But in any case, this idea that, you know, this is what we have to do, and you know, all these projections, you have to think even those people are going to say, like, yeah, this is really bad for the economy, but you know, all the doctors say this, and if you let everybody go back out on Easter, then, you know, it's like, well, we're all starting to feel better. Any of you who have read any of the terrible accounts that people have of a relative who has passed away from it, or you know, and honestly, it doesn't even pass away. The people who are like finally over it, there's the day where they feel so much better, and then it hits them again. So I think that, you know, that aspect of it is just something that people need to keep in mind. And, you know, I think I talked about this last week. I don't watch the news at all. Well, you know, after a certain point, not at bedtime. I just before bed, I'm like, no, I need to be able to sleep. And then I try not to watch it in the morning. The rest of the day, it's a different story. But as it is, there's so much to look at. And it's like, I'll sometimes read these accounts of people. And the first person that I know was somebody I was a page with at NBC in New York. She posted that she had it. She's feeling relatively okay. But when you read some of the more intense stories, it's sort of horrifying. And I wanted to give Chelsea a moment to share the story of your relative. And I'm sorry, I forget what the relation is.
Well, actually, maybe somebody can help me out with this because it is my father's cousin who is currently on a ventilator from it.
Yeah, is that a second cousin? I think that's how that works. A cousin once removed, but anyway, so right. Your father's cousin.
It's it's been his daughter that's been updating us, and she's giving us, you know, a day by day about what's happened. And really it was like within 1 week where he had an onset of symptoms and then for a couple of days could not get tested. In fact, he was told that he was tested and he actually wasn't. He was tested for the flu instead, but eventually was diagnosed. And then he just went downhill within a week and has been on a ventilator now for 1 week. Condition is not really getting any better. By some measures, maybe worse, you know, 76 right. years old, really healthy.
We just don't know. These are the people that you have to look at. You know, I said this on one of my other shows, but knock on wood, if any of the four of us get it, they're actually not going to test us for it because we're not in what, I mean, I have asthma.
You should just assume that you have it. You should act accordingly, assuming that you do have it.
Right. If you're having these symptoms, you're like, okay, I probably have that. And they always tell you, you should call your doctor. Don't go, especially don't go to the emergency room, you know? It's, you know, I don't know. I mean, there's so much to really take in, but just a headline that I wanted to share is that, look, the World Health Organization does continue to warn that, yes, we in the United States could be this epicenter that we're starting to see, but if the people who are sick are getting treatment, that's going to help. And, you know, you're hearing about the hospitals they're building, like in New York, they're turning the Javits Convention Center. And that's what they did in China. And that should be somewhat encouraging, despite the, I think, criminal way of that China handled this. Despite that, they're actually getting past it. But it's been more than 3 months, really. But let's be honest, they ignored it and destroyed the samples and did all that stuff early on. It's about 3 months that they finally started trying to do something about it. They just lied while they were doing it and said you couldn't catch it from other people and all of that. So I don't know. I mean, is that what we're looking at? I don't know. But we'll unfortunately have to look at that. But The final thought, and we only do have a couple minutes, is this idea that President Trump tweeted something. I'm not even going to read it verbatim, but just that everybody who's trying to encourage everybody to stay home is because they need the economy to be bad so that they can say, look what he did to the economy. And I think that you can write that on Twitter, but God, you just hope that somebody who trusts whose opinion he trusts has his ear. And I wanted to take this moment. I was reading an article over the weekend that apparently somebody we all have to thank is Tucker Carlson, because I know Chelsea gave the head cock, but when everybody was covering the impeachment, he wasn't interested in the impeachment because he knew the way it was going to end, just like the rest of us did. He's somebody that he trusted told him. And so he started covering this. And at some point in the last less than a month when he was at Mar-a-Lago, he went up to President Trump and he's like, look, I don't think your people are giving you the real information on this. Because even he knows, even Tucker Carlson knows, Trump only takes in what he sees from people in Fox News. So I'm somebody that he watches. I'm here in person. Let me go talk to him directly. And, you know, I guess the network didn't know he'd done it. And they apparently were upset because that's not what their message was. But to the extent that we're having any of this now, I think I'm going to trace it back to Tucker Carlson. And, you know, it's you can think what you want about him, but I'll say thank you for going up to President Trump and being like, no, no, this thing's actually really bad. I know what everybody's telling you. Anyway, I feel like we had a bad distribution of talk time this week. The audio was a little wonky. We'll fix that for next week. Sorry, everyone. But we will be back next Tuesday with the same little four-way split that I know a lot of you are watching us on. And to keep in touch with all of us, Tamara Brown, where do people find you?
Follow me.
After Buzz TV tomorrow at 9 p.m. Pacific time. We will be covering the season finale of Star Trek Picard. What a more fun way to, you know, head into bedtime talking about Star Trek. In any case, that is all the time we have for now. But as I like to say, to quote the great Jerry Springer, take care of yourselves and each other. And of course, live long and prosper. We'll see everybody next week.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.